nothing more wonderful than being your called out people, O God. In body, soul, and mind, you have brought us, and we are joyfully and forever yours. Amen.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Easter. And he is risen.
He is risen indeed.
Today we're going to do something a bit different for Easter service. And that is for two reasons. One is because this is my sixth Easter preaching at Revolution, and I ran out of things to say, frankly. What we're doing is we're going to start a new series. And although the miracle of Jesus' resurrection is going to steer the last half of the message this morning, it's going to be a few minutes before that runway feels clear, and so I'm asking you to stick with me. So the series we're starting is part of a three-installment arc that we're going to be doing this spring on Revolution's values. And in each installment, what we're going to do is we're going to look at a practice that we celebrate and cherish here at Revolution as a community. And then we're going to explore how that practice depends on a spiritual posture in our hearts. How we can't do this thing well if our heart isn't oriented correctly. And the three values that we're going to be looking at in these three mini series are welcome and curiosity and action. And that makes our first topic for the first week, or for these first few weeks, welcome. And the big idea is this: our capacity to be an open community, a church family that is welcoming and inclusive and safe and loving, our capacity to do that isn't something that we can do by our will alone. It's something that depends on a posture of surrender in each and every one of our hearts. Surrender, I'm arguing today, is what fuels and sustains our ability to be genuinely welcoming. And without it, we might be able to perform welcome. We might be able to perform openness for a little while, but it's not going to last. And the reason it's not going to last is because it won't go far enough. Now, every series needs a workable metaphor, and here's the one for today. I want to clarify, I checked this. It's about my daughter, and I checked it with her about 20 minutes ago to make sure it was okay that I did this, because that's a value of mine. I want to check with my children or my wife or anybody else if I'm going to use them as a principal illustration, right? And I forgot until this morning, and so I was like, please say this is okay, because this is like the next 3 minutes, and I don't want to write that on the fly. But she said it was good. Anyways, if you're wondering why the Kamei shows are hard to pin down for get-together these days, the reason is because Evangeline, my oldest daughter, is playing high school softball. And I'm very excited about this. I love baseball, which means that I love softball by association, right? And what I've enjoyed most about this passion of my daughter's is that now there's something I get to play catch with, which is a thing that I deeply love to do. And what we work on most often when we play catch are pop flies. Now, I want to clarify something that's very important at this point in the illustration, which is that I never played high school baseball or any high school sport. And that means that I don't know anything about coaching at all. But I have a child who I'm responsible to coach. So, and my apologies to my daughter, I have been making things up, right? But here's what I've noticed and how I've been trying to help her most recently. When Evangeline tries to catch a pop fly, something happens in her brain that convinces her, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that her arms are 6 feet long. She has 6-foot long arms, And so what happens is she like goes close to where the ball is going, and she gets set, and she plants her feet, and she reaches for a ball that is still 3 feet away from her. And this happens consistently. So what's the solution from a non-coach's perspective? Well, like I said, I have no actual idea, but what I've been saying to her over and over is this. Catch it with your feet. Catch it with your feet. This is unhelpful. It has not worked. What I'm trying to communicate, though, is this, is that if she wants to catch a ball, she has to get her whole self under it, right? She has to imagine that she has 6-inch arms, like Tyrannosaurus arms, instead of 6-foot arms, so that the ball lands right at her center. And this is extremely hard to do. But the point is this, if her posture isn't right, if she is not thinking about her core instead of her arms, she is trusting her reach to do too much, and it won't work. And so my thesis this morning is that every one of the practices in a church community, our practices as individual Christians, works in exactly the same way. That if we don't get our posture right, our core right, that we're not going to be able to get our arms out wide enough to catch everything that we want to catch. And that matters because I think when it comes to welcome, we know what we want. I don't need to convince the people in this particular church community that it's important to be kind or to be open, or to be the ones who start a conversation, to be sincere, to be vulnerable, and to encourage authenticity in our relationships. A lot of times that's the sermon you'd hear, but I know you guys, and I don't need to do that. You already get all of that. And I know because I see it, like each and every Sunday, you're smiling, and you're laughing, and you're including others and sharing your stories. I watched it happen just a few minutes ago with the brunch, where I'm like seeing people intentionally sit with new people, people that aren't their like core friends, just to be welcoming. You guys get it. Hardly a week goes by that there isn't a circle of 3 or 4 folks after church here where someone has tears in their eyes. You bring meals to each other. You show up for each other. You love each other well. And it is an unfathomable gift to be a part of a community like this. But, you know, there's too many compliments for not to be a part. In many ways, we're still a young community. And what happens, and here's what happens, to well-meaning, friendly communities as they age, right? Close friendships become closed friendships. And we all start to run out of reach. Circles become exclusive, and welcome dries up over time. And we're not the first people to like ever discover this about being a faith community. In the Bible, God's entire purpose for setting Israel apart as his special people on the earth is supposed to be about their welcome. God tells the first Israelite, Abraham, that through him all the nations on the earth are going to be blessed. And then he explains to Moses that Israel is meant to demonstrate to their neighbors what it means to be God's people, to demonstrate to their neighbors what it means to be God's people, to be blessed through relationship with God. And the reason is so that those neighbors might see and believe that the God of Israel can be trusted. And the church, which we're a part of, is intended to do exactly the same thing. We're supposed to live with God, so that others might trust God can be lived with. God's hand is here on his people, but God's eyes are always elsewhere. He is watching his entire creation in hope that they will return to him. And once upon a time, Israel, despite that mandate and that mission, allowed a fear of outsiders to hinder their welcome, to make them plant their feet and limit their reach. And then the Bible tells us a story where they stopped trying to reach at all. And this closing down of the welcome of Israel is something that we know grieved our God. And then through Christ, the mistake of closing down welcome was exposed The gates that Israel had put up were torn down, and the circle ends up being reopened, this time by Christ, to include anyone from any background, anywhere. That's the story that we're supposed to be living out. But if you take like one quick look at the church of today, the universal church of today, you will see that we have repeated Israel's mistake and then some. We are known to our neighbors as judges and gatekeepers and guilt trippers and worse. Sundays often don't feel safe for outsiders, right? They don't feel safe to atheists and agnostics. They sometimes don't even feel safe to women. They don't feel safe for people of a different color or a different faith or a different sexual orientation than everybody else. And I know that you all don't want things to be that way. I see it every week. It's not what you want things to be like. But we have to wonder, how did it happen elsewhere, and what's to stop it from happening here? In his letter to the Christians of Rome, who were largely non-Jews, the Apostle Paul writes this. He says, "Now I am speaking to you Gentiles. Inasmuch as I am an apostle to the Gentiles, I celebrate my ministry in order to make my own people jealous and thus save some of them. For if their rejection is the reconciliation of the world, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? If the root is holy, then the branches also are holy. But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, a wild olive shoot, were grafted among the others to share the rich root of the olive tree, do not boast over the branches. Remember, you do not support the root, but the root supports you. You will say, 'Branches were broken off so that I might be grafted in.' And that is true. They were broken off on account of unbelief, but you stand on account of belief. So do not become arrogant, but be afraid. For if God did not spare the natural branches, neither will he spare you. Note then the kindness and the severity of God. Severity towards those who have fallen, but God's kindness toward you if you continue in his kindness. Otherwise, you also will be cut off. And even those of Israel, if they do not continue in unbelief, will be grafted in, for God has the power to graft them in again. For if you have been cut from what is by nature a wild olive tree and grafted contrary to nature into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these natural branches be grafted back into their own olive tree?" That was a long passage. We can look at it pretty quickly, I think. So Paul, who is Jewish, says to these Gentiles, to these non-Jews who are Jesus followers, that God's ministry to them is a ministry that still has his first people in mind, that still has Jews in mind. Like Israel once was to their neighbors, the Gentile Christians are intended to be a witness back to Paul's fellow Jews about the beautiful work of welcome that God is capable of. Which means, of course, that even though they have been rejected in this moment, that God has not given up on them. That they can see, as God's Spirit moves in the city of Rome among non-Jewish Christians, they can see a story of God's like reckless and inclusive love that will still welcome them. And Paul frames this ministry, where they're trying to be a witness back to the Jews, he frames it humorously as jealousy. And he says that if Israel's rejection of Jesus led to God's reconciliation with non-Jews, with the outside world, then what greater wonders might result from Israel's reconciliation? Paul says that the answer is life from the dead, and he assumes that his readers are going to want the same thing, that they're going to wish for that same thing, have the same vision. But then he gets to the problem, right? He writes this, "But if some of the branches were broken off, and you, a wild olive shoot, were grafted in among the others to share the rich root of the olive tree," which is him saying, if you think the Jews stopped being God's people so that there'd be room for you to be God's people, "do not boast over the branches." And then he says, "You will say, 'Branches were broken off that I might be grafted in.'" Which means, I think, this, that what closes the community, what shuts a community down from welcome, is this. It is a mindset of scarcity and a mindset of privilege. Scarcity and privilege. The sense that other people like had their time, had their chance. And what we need most is to focus on ourselves and on the things that we've got now. There's not enough room in the life of hope for everybody. And if you missed your chance, that's on you. Now, you're hearing me talk about all this. You heard me read that very long passage. And I have to imagine that for most of you, you feel like not relatable. This isn't my attitude, I know. But what about this? I could be nice to somebody new, but my friends list is full. I hope that that new person can find somebody else to connect to. They probably aren't really a good fit here anyway, is the thing I hear all the time. They're too old. I'm too old. I think those statements sting just a little bit more because although we as a community of people strive for openness, I think we know that we don't do it perfectly. Now, to be clear, I am not trying to say that everybody can really be intimately close to every single person. I know that that's unhealthy, and it's also impossible. But do you realize that making sure everyone is intimately close to someone is still your responsibility? Are you sometimes a little too eager to close your door? Like, Kenny, you're asking too much. Here's the thing. I know. I'm the worst offender on all of this. Like, my friend circle is over full. No room at the end for, like, anybody new. But here's the thing, right? Like, God's isn't. And are my eyes still looking in the same place as his eyes are? Romans 11:18 says, remember, you do not support the root, but the root supports you. So if scarcity is what causes this circle to close, if the limit of our welcome is about what we can do, right, then that's the moment that we're planting our feet and getting frustrated that we don't have 6-foot arms. And Paul says the solution to that problem, the solution to planting our feet, is fear. To be afraid of a God who expects you to be recklessly open or else. And there are good reasons why Paul spoke that way to the Romans, I'm sure, and why God has enabled Paul's words to travel all the way to us. But I'm going to suggest that in our context, I think there's another way for us to hear the same thing Paul's trying to say. And it's this. Do we remember what the miracle was? Do we remember what the miracle was? When we were alone and disconnected and adrift, God connected our broken branches right to the tree of his church, and we found life in it. God's spirit moved into our hearts and our lives, and slowly our hearts changed. And then as our hearts changed, our behaviors began to change. And then love and joy and empathy and kindness and peace and so many other things started to flow through us. And then we experienced forgiveness in a profound way, maybe for the first time. And then we learned to be forgiving people. And our eyes were opened after a while to see the needs of other people, maybe first in the circle of this church and then eventually in our neighborhood or on the street. Our eyes opened so we could see people. We became good friends to each other, and then we became good friends to our coworkers and to our neighbors. And all of that stuff, that journey of transformation, that's the power of God in us. Like remaking and reworking us. That is like the acting out, the actualization of the gospel. And it's his gospel, but the thing that Paul wants to remind us of is that it's also not finished. Paul says, for if you have been cut from what is by nature a wild olive tree and grafted contrary to nature into a cultivated olive tree, how much more will these natural branches be grafted back into their own olive tree? There's still work to be done beyond you finding your place. And what we forget, I think what tricks us into thinking that being mostly welcoming as a church community is the same as seeing people like God sees them, is what we forget is that the anomaly in the whole story was us. That the reach of God was most extravagant to you. And God didn't catch you with like a miraculous 6-foot arm, right? God caught you with his whole body. His feet never stopped moving in pursuit of you. He ranged so far from his set position. Baseball season started. We're going to keep this metaphor going all day. Like, he ranged so far from his position to get to where you are. And he did that because his eyes, like, never left you. They never left you. Catching you was his entire focus, his mission. And we forget that, like, Jesus had a home, right? The Bible is so clear about this. He belongs in a place. He belongs at the right hand of his Father, safe and holy and comfortable and worshiped by angels and people for all eternity. But his love for us was so great, so all-encompassing, that he was willing to do everything to make sure that even though we were far from him, we would not hit the ground. And so my point is that to be Jesus' people is to aspire to that same heart and those same eyes, and also to aspire to those same feet. Not to grow complacent in our own nourishment in a community, but to share God's hunger, and then to be equipped by God to do stuff that is impossible for us to do on our own. The welcome of God depended on Jesus' willingness not just to reach, but to surrender his entire self to the salvation of the people God loves. That's the posture that explodes our idea of welcome from like merely just being nice, being friendly, to being radically empathetic and loving towards others. And so the point is, if we're not willing to give up our own bodies for the catch, to run after other people with our whole selves, to even eat a little turf on the dive, man, I'm running this thing into the dirt. We are forgetting the miracle that got us in the group in the first place. On the team. I really blew it there. On the team. So if welcome under our own power is imperfect, and it leads to stagnation, and then it leads to an atmosphere of judgment, then how do we do any of this stuff? How do we learn to stop trusting 6-foot arms and catch with our core? What does the essential root of the olive tree that we are relying on try to teach us to do? I think the challenge is to remember what surrender actually looks like, which means that the solution is Easter. 2 days ago on Good Friday, we remember the extent of God's love for us as it was revealed by Jesus on the cross where he died. And what did surrender include for him? It included the judgment of the temple elders, his authorities on this earth, that he was a heretic and defiled in his soul because of the company that he chose to keep. It included condemnation by the state for his refusal to pledge allegiance to it. It included beatings and abuse, and importantly, it included mockery for seeing exactly what God meant for him to see, which is that Israel's story is supposed to be for everyone. A posture of surrender means never planting your feet because your eye is still on the ball. It's more important to you than anything else. And if your focus is just as intently on who God loves as God's is, the miracle is that God can do more through you than you believe he can. That metaphor, I'm going to ditch it. The metaphor has gotten away from us. Let me say this different, in a more practical way. I know that we all want Revolution to be a welcoming, safe, and inclusive church. I know that we're all reaching for that goal. But where I want to challenge us today is in our trust in the unlimited and unfathomable grace of God. It is safe for us to lose ourselves in that. It really is. And so sometimes we need to trust that God is going to do gracious work beyond the work that we can imagine. So if somebody walks in the door here at Revolution with a chip on their shoulder, even with anger at God, even with anger at us, We can rush to meet that person with the same enthusiasm and kindness that we would show to our dearest friend if they came in the door. They might seem unreachable to us, right? But if we are surrendered to God's heart, we don't need to be afraid. If somebody moves in next door to you and immediately puts out whatever political flag you find most ignorant and abominable, your options and choices might vary on that, but they put up the thing you find most horrible, resist the impulse to pull away, to say, like, this is just not going to be my friend. This is not going to work out. Resist the impulse to pull away and remember God's infinite love. Get under them, all the way under them, and catch them with your core. If a person shows up to your office whose lifestyle or identity choices make you uncomfortable, before you ask, well, God, do you really agree with all of this stuff? Ask, God, can you help me see this person the same way you see them? And here's like a wild thing. If you ever ask that question with a genuinely surrendered heart, a heart that hasn't forgotten how far God ranged to catch you, I promise you that your attitude towards that person will be transformed. We don't need to be boundary keepers or morality legislators. God can handle every bit of that. And all he has asked us to do is to love first. And we also need to worry about how full our friendship roster is. This is the message that I'm preaching to myself. Because God has put us in a community to help with that. We surrender first, and then God works the miracle. We did Good Friday. We haven't done Easter. Isn't this the Easter story? That Jesus gave utterly and absolutely everything, endured every abuse, listened to every rebuke of his welcome and his love, and then the grave couldn't hold him. He got under the world with his whole body, caught it with his feet, let it crush him, and then won. A posture of surrender to God's capacity for grace, to our God-given capacity to love and include other people. A posture of surrender is what makes radical and enduring welcoming work. And the proof that this surrender, that the choice to lose ourselves for others, the proof that this will work, that we are safe, even when doing that is costly and scary, is the empty tomb on Easter Sunday. Because if Jesus rose from the dead, then he was right about love. And if Jesus rose from the dead, he was right about God and God's compassion for the world. And if Jesus rose from the dead, then there is nothing ever for us to actually fear. Because if Jesus rose from the dead, following wholeheartedly after him will lead us to life too. And the only danger is in getting what we think will be close enough and then planting our feet. We're going to talk in the weeks to come about how to do all this in a way that honors our health, in a way that leans on community. But today's message is supposed to be about our hearts. Welcome depends on surrender to God's passion for people. And if we try it any other way, we're going to run out of reach. I don't think any of us want that to be Revolution's story. And so let's love people recklessly. Give me one more. Let's go after the ball. I'll pray for us.